the Boulder City Podcast, where we focus on the people, the places, and the events in our small town. The Boulder City Podcast is sponsored by the Emerald Island Casino and the Rainbow Club Casino in downtown Henderson, where slot players are treated like royalty. Today we begin our series of interviews with the candidates for elected office in Boulder City for the primary election in early June. The positions being contested are, first, the Justice of the Peace, replacing Judge Victor Miller, who is not running for re-election, and two positions on City Council, where the incumbents are Sherry Jorgensen and Matt Fox. Today we sit down with Christopher Tillman, who is running for Justice of the Peace. Tillman's background in Boulder City stretches back to the building of the dam, where his grandfather was involved. He has lots of experience with the justice system in Clark County and beyond, and has appeared in the Boulder City court system many times. He spoke with me at our podcast offices in Boulder City in April. Welcome to the Boulder City Podcast. My guest today is our first candidate for a position here in Boulder City in our series of elections we're going to do this spring. And my first candidate is Chris Tillman, who's a candidate for the Justice of the Peace. Chris, thanks for joining us. It's an honor to sit down and talk with you. We've known each other for quite some time. Yep. Our kids know each other even better. So
yeah, and thank you for having me.
Sure, absolutely. So let's start with your background, as well as, you know, as where and how you got your legal expertise.
Oh, well, I went to Boulder High, so okay. You know, I graduated in '84, and I then went to Denmark as an exchange student.
Oh, okay.
And then came back to the United States and went to Cal Lutheran University in Thousand Oaks. I mm-hmm. had a football scholarship and played there and went there for 2 years and then went to UC Santa Barbara. That's where I graduated from in 1990. From there, I went to Golden Gate University College of Law in San Francisco and got my law degree in 93. And then I knew I wasn't going to stay in California. My wife and I had gotten married and we lived together in San Francisco and there was a hiring freeze. I'd worked for the public defender's office in the city and county of San Francisco through law school. And they basically said, look, we're not going to hire anyone. There was a, if you recall, a bit of a recession in Northern California area. And they just, no one was hiring. Mm-hmm. So I decided to come back and, you know, got a job here in Las Vegas and began practicing law here in 93 after I passed the bar.
Okay, great. So what is your area of expertise in your law practice?
So there's three. I do a lot of family law and divorces and custody and guardianships and stuff like that. I represent indigent parents and non-indigent parents in abuse and neglect cases, so dependency actions. So CPS takes your kids and you know, I'm retained to to get them back or court appointed to get them back. And then criminal defense, and I've done criminal defense for now going on 31 years.
Okay, great. And so how many felony cases and preliminary hearings have you been involved in?
So specifically criminal, it's well over 1,000 if you add them all together. My staff and I tried to count them, and we got back about 17 years, and we were at 1,000, and we said, call it good. Mm-hmm. Now, if you add in abuse, neglect, and that includes termination of parental rights, it easily doubles. Yep. And then if you add in family law trials, you know, that's another, tripling of it. So, so I mean, the thousands is fair to say. You know, the majority of my appellate work has been done in the arena of termination of parental rights. And those, though, while we do now have a court of appeals, so you go from district court downtown to the court of appeals and then up to the Nevada Supreme Court, that's one of the areas where you skip the court of appeals.
Okay.
So you go directly to the Supreme Court of the state of Nevada, and I've done 25 plus appeals.
Okay. And so obviously you've been in all kinds of different courtrooms, not just Boulder City, but all over the state.
Well, my goal when I first started practicing, Roger, was to hit every courtroom in the state of Nevada. Mm-hmm. And then I realized quickly, there are some way up north that I don't think I'll ever see.
Right.
Some of these regional justice courts, kind of like we are an outlying area of court, in Austin, Nevada, the county seats up in Battle Mountain. I mean, there's not a lot, not a lot of action in that town. But I have, appeared in Ely. I have appeared in Pioche, Alamo, and within our county, Searchlight numerous times, mm-hmm. Laughlin numerous times,
okay.
Out in Sandy Valley Justice Court and Gene Justice Court is what it is. So yeah, so it's been a varied career, I must say.
Exactly. So we kind of know what your connection to Boulder City is. It goes all the way back to your father's a 31er, correct?
Grandfather,
right.
Yeah, so Grandpa Lee was the oldest living 31er mm-hmm. that was still alive, and that is, as you know, those who
sure.
worked on the construction of the dam.
Right.
So he and Granny moved down here from Ely. She was born on a ranch outside of Ely, and her mm-hmm. dad was born on that same ranch outside of Ely. And Grandpa was kind of he was the stepson of a millwright, so they would build mills for mines.
Okay.
So he wasn't a miner, but he learned electronics through that millwright work, and so he and Granny moved down here from Ely mm-hmm. because he heard there was going to be a job during the Depression, and he was lucky enough to get one.
Okay.
He didn't get a house in Boulder City, or they didn't get mm-hmm. a house right away because it wasn't enough.
Sure, right.
So the majority of people who worked on the construction of the dam actually initially lived in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And he would tell the story of how he and my grandmother were renting an acre of land mm-hmm. and a trailer right where the Stratosphere sits
really?
Today. And the woman who was renting it came to him and said, "Lee, what do you think about buying this place?"
Yeah.
And he always said with a chuckle, "We'd all be on Easy Street if I would have said yes."
Right.
But I told her, right after that project at the dam is over, this town is going to dry up and blow away like every other Nevada mining town I've ever been in. He was wrong about that one.
Right.
Correct about some of the other
right.
ones,
okay.
But yeah. So.
But he stuck around in Boulder City.
So he got a job as an electrician mm-hmm. at the dam after the construction of the dam. And stayed until he and Granny passed away. He retired from the dam in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
So he worked for the federal government for, basically his whole life.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And we know your kids went to Boulder City High School. And
yep. My father and his five siblings mm-hmm. all graduated from Boulder High.
Mm-hmm.
And, we have other Tillmans that were my, I guess, my dad's cousins who went to Boulder High. And my dad raised my brother and I here, he and I graduated from Boulder High, and then my kids went to Boulder High, so grew up here.
So, obviously, you got roots in this town, and that's one of the reasons you want to be a Justice of the Peace, but what are some of the other reasons?
Well, in this race, I'm the most qualified, and mm-hmm. it's not even close. I'm also the municipal court pro tem, so when Judge Miller's unavailable, goes on vacation, or has a conflict mm-hmm. of interest, I'm on that list.
Okay.
Qualifications we just talked about, it's judicial elections are unique, and it's not like running for a legislative position or
right.
a city council position where your political views could be the hot new thing,
right.
or it could be a popularity contest.
Mm-hmm.
It really shouldn't be. The
right.
issue should be, you have judicial temperament.
Sure.
Trust me, I have practiced in front of some very smart people who mm-hmm. had zero business being on the bench.
Right.
They just could not handle the personalities of
right.
attorneys and litigants, and made for bad judges.
Sure.
Then the next question is, are you qualified? Have you seen this before?
Mm-hmm.
You don't want your judge in any case you have to be learning on the fly.
Sure.
I can tell you with absolute confidence, I've seen every scenario
mm-hmm.
that we see in justice and muni court over 31 years.
Right.
It's been, a large, large area of my practice.
Sure.
Now, I have seen that as well. Very nice judges who have zero clue about what
right.
to do in this arena of
mm-hmm.
law. And so you got to have both.
Yeah.
And absolutely, I have both.
Sure. And if you have half the stuff that Judge Miller have, I think we're in good
hands. He's tough. He's a tough man to follow.
Yeah, sure.
I mean,
Absolutely.
His name's on that wall at that court
right.
house for very good reason.
Right.
And then, I did one of my first trials in front of Vic Miller
mm-hmm.
in 1994 in the old courthouse, which was in the basement of City Hall.
Right.
That was now 30 years ago. Yeah. And he's the same guy he was then.
Yeah.
Just even keeled, knows the law, keeps control of his courtroom without being heavy-handed or robe heavy, as we call it in the industry. Yeah. He's a tough act to follow, but I think I'm up for it.
So what does the Justice of the Peace in Bold Township do?
Well, okay, so there's a number of things that the Justice of the Peace on paper does.
Mm-hmm.
The most obvious is gross misdemeanors and felonies that occur within the township of Boulder Township, which is different from the city of Boulder City. So those come to the Justice of the Peace for what we call preliminary hearings. So the bail hearing first, and then the preliminary hearings. Now, preliminary hearings is there enough evidence that the state has to send that case to jury trial downtown in district court?
Right.
Misdemeanors that occur within the township can go through Boulder Justice Court. However, most of them get picked up by the city and go through the municipal court.
Mm-hmm.
They do, the Justice of the Peace statewide do evictions, the landlord-tenant evictions. They do small claims cases up to a jurisdictional maximum of $10,000.
Okay.
They do civil cases up to a jurisdictional maximum of $15,000. A big part of what we see in Boulder Township and also downtown in the Vegas Justice Courts is the temporary protective orders,
mm-hmm.
Temporary restraining orders, depending on they both are terms of art that mean different things for different circumstances, whether you're in a intimate dating relationship or not, can be one or the other. You do have the need to have a magistrate, whether it be the judge in Muni Court or in Justice Court, look at warrants.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a couple of instances where the Supreme Court has changed the rule where, the police can't just pull you over and pin you down and pull blood out of your arm on a DUI, right? They need a warrant. It's a search. So, at 2 a.m, the Justice of the Peace or the Muni judge, depending on where they look for it,
mm-hmm.
has to be available to do that, and to say, hey, this is an instance where, the police are within their authority to get a warrant or not. Now we have this newer case with arrest warrants. I mean, there's certain instances where the police have to get, judicial authority on an arrest warrant to come in and arrest somebody, mm-hmm. even though, the warrant's valid. So, so it's interesting what the varied stuff is that the JP will do.
So there's still a lot of things that change over time because of Supreme Court decisions or something like
that. It's not stagnant, and that keeps your brain fresh.
Exactly right.
I won't say it's stagnant in my other areas of practice.
Sure.
I'm absolutely, if I win, I'd be willing to give up. It's 30 years of doing it,
mm-hmm.
and doing numerous appeals to the Supreme Court. I'm just ready for a change. But it's not stagnant, and it's kind of interesting to see the progression of the law.
So when we interviewed Judge Miller, he explained the difference between the municipal court judge and the Justice of the Peace. According to Judge Miller, the municipal court judge is appointed by city council, whereas the Justice of the Peace is elected. So if you are elected Justice of the Peace, would you want to be named municipal court judge?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm going to give you a couple of reasons why. Number one, the two are intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Muni Court doesn't do all the varied things that a JP does. However, you're doing a lot of the same things with regard to guilt or innocence on misdemeanors. Number two, my dad was on city council, by the way, from 1980 to 1984, my high school year. So I got away with nothing.
Right.
The police all knew me by name.
Right.
I mean, and during that period of time, this is pre-Judge Miller,
mm-hmm.
we had two. We had one JP that was elected, and then we had an appointed Muni judge, and things just didn't work as smoothly. Mm-hmm. There's just no other way to put it. It was kind of an unwritten agreement after that, look, if we get somebody that we like in both, it's a good idea to have both. And then third, the Muni judge, Vic Miller has created about 10 years ago the drug court program. I have been the drug court defense attorney for the last five. Mm-hmm. And I must say that program is, I'm passionate about it. He is very passionate. I mean, it's his baby. Mm-hmm. That program absolutely is one of the reasons why I want to have that position. Sure. I want to absolutely maintain, that program.
Right.
And maybe expand it, mm-hmm. if the money's there, and there's a lot of moving parts on that.
Sure, so, I understand.
Yeah.
Great. So in addition to the duties you just mentioned, there's these other duties that a Justice of the Peace does in terms of marrying people. You're also the ex officio registrar of voters, from what I understand, as well. What do you have any thoughts on those duties?
Doing the weddings, I think, would be fun,
right.
And I really will look forward to that.
Yeah,
and
right.
And when one of my endorsement interviews, I got the question, "Would you have a problem with same-sex weddings?" I'm like, "No. I mean, why would I?"
Yeah.
But number one, I just think doing weddings, civil weddings, would be just a great part of the position.
Sure.
As far as the registrar of voters. So it's interesting. I've done a little research on when I decided to run. Mm-hmm. When Vic Miller called me and said, "Hey, I think you should put your name in the ring." I just went and looked up. Well, what other things do you have to do? And I knew about the weddings.
Sure.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't know about the ex officio right. registrar of voters, and so I did some research on the legislative history. So that law was enacted in 1960, and the reason why was. It was before cell phones. It was before the internet.
Yeah.
And if you're in an outlying area, because mm-hmm. Downtown in Vegas, they're not
right.
ex officio registrar of voters.
Oh, really?
Okay. It's only the outlying areas. Mm-hmm. But you can see, you're in Austin, Nevada in 1960. Where do you have to go to register to vote? Well,
yeah.
You got to go to the county seat.
Right.
Well, that's 130 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And so making the judge or the justice of the peace, be the registrar of voters, kind of made sense then.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that duty is even looked at anymore because
right.
you can get right on your phone
uh-huh.
and register to vote in a lot
exactly
less time.
Right.
You can go up to the courthouse
right.
and get the form and fill it out. And then the justice court has to, within 10 days, I think, get it back to the the actual registrar of voters at the election. It really is a funny part of the statute that's antiquated.
That's crazy. You get your driver's license there, you can register to vote, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's really easy now. I mean, you can go to DMV, you don't have to.
Right.
But, if someone wants to do that and,
sure.
call up the old statute, okay, it's part of the job.
Right. So we have some of the citizens in Boulder City to submit questions through Boulder City Social, and the next couple of questions are a part of those questions. This one is, how many times do you believe a person should be allowed to commit misdemeanors or felonies before they are sentenced to jail or prison?
Okay, so Roger, and I read these really carefully, the judicial canons of ethics
mm-hmm.
prevent me from going into specifics in specific
right.
cases. We're mm-hmm. not very technically
sure.
with this question, but we're close. So I got to be careful.
Okay.
And I have to say that the answer is it depends. Now,
right.
I first started practicing law. You literally saw people do jail time for small amounts of marijuana.
Right.
I remember having a client that had, an eighth of an ounce or something like that, that did over a month in jail.
Right.
Okay. Before I could get him out. They wouldn't OR him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was
right.
it was like he was,
yeah.
he was committing violent crime. So when I see a question like this now,
mm-hmm.
okay, is that person, now it's not going to be marijuana because it's
sure,
legal,
right.
but is that person with small amounts of drugs, just possession,
mm-hmm.
is that person worthy of doing, jail time? And it depends on which hat I'm on, too,
right.
or is on my head. Muni court. That means the city is putting him in jail in Henderson.
Right.
It costs the city $150 a day
right.
to house our prisoners. Because mm-hmm. we don't have a jail, and nor sure. should we.
Right.
Now, if it's in justice court, then the county has to deal with it. Mm-hmm. You have to also think about, look, is this person going to be qualifying for one of the diversionary courts? And we have a plethora of them that mm-hmm. we can talk about. But it depends. Now, violent crime, I get it. Yes. I mean, you know, don't
sure.
let the defense attorney hat fool you.
Right.
Violent criminals need to go to jail, mm-hmm. you know. But if it's small, little stuff, we got to look at the cost-benefit analysis.
Sure, sure. Yeah. No question. And this next one is similar to that, and it's about the drug court. And the person is asking, if a person becomes an habitual defender in the drugs and doesn't respond to any of the programs that you might offer through the drug court, should they go to jail?
Then? Yes. Yeah. And that is, okay, so I'm part of the National Academy of Drug mm-hmm. Court Professionals. And every year we go to training. Mm-hmm. This year it's in Anaheim, and the reason I'm telling you that is when I first started as the drug court, well, let's back the train up. When I first started getting as a defense attorney people into specialty courts, mm-hmm. the model was you test dirty,
yeah.
you go to jail.
Right.
Now the model has evolved to, okay, look, you probably need a higher level of care, more treatment. Because putting you in jail for 6 months on the underlying offense mm-hmm. because you tested dirty once
right.
is really as ineffective as not having a drug court, and now we haven't given him any treatment.
Right.
So, I mean, remember these specialty courts are all over now, and they
sure.
work. Mm-hmm. We have in Las Vegas and Henderson, we have drug court. We have mental health court. We have a co-occurring court. I just got a client into co-occurring court. Had a mental
right.
health issue and a drug problem. There's a co-occurring court that can meet both issues.
Right.
And this is a person that was that revolving door
right.
client slash, you know, defendant. When there's a couple others. There's Veterans Court and Homeless Court, and you know,
I interviewed Judge Cheryl Moss when she developed the gambling court in Las Vegas.
Absolutely, and that court mm-hmm. works.
Yes,
I have seen brilliant things with that court, and then we have in the abuse neglect world, in the dependency world, we have family court, drug court, mm-hmm. and you know, it was, you know. Called Meth Mom's Court, but
right.
what we had at one point 12 beds for moms addicted to not only methamphetamine but
sure.
other drugs, where they would have their children with them
mm-hmm.
in a therapeutic setting, and then they do the drug court stuff. And these were wildly successful. And
mm-hmm.
these are people who we don't see the recidivism. But back to to answer your question, if they repeatedly just don't do the program.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a consequence to
right.
it, and it's. I think the general public doesn't understand that drug courts or specialty courts are not being easy on people.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot more work for 15 months
sure.
to do
right.
the work, to do the meetings, to do the reading, to do the counseling,
mm-hmm.
to possibly get on medication if you have a mental health issue.
Right.
Than it is just to, okay, give me my 5 days.
Yeah, right.
But that doesn't help us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're finding too with the partners in the city helping us fund this stuff, that it's cheaper for the city
sure.
in the long run.
Right.
Now I gotta tell you, I'm not, obviously these are confidential clients, but
mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna tell you who they are, but
right.
you go shopping at any of the stores around town,
mm-hmm.
You see graduates.
Yeah.
You don't know who they are, I do.
Right.
And I will tell you, these are very successful now people
mm-hmm.
who had a problem before.
Yeah.
And so it's not only did they save us money by not going to jail repeatedly, but where are they now in their life?
Mm-hmm.
And are they successful you know,
right.
members of society? And it's very rewarding,
sure.
frankly.
Yeah,
you know?
No question about that.
Yeah.
So as you mentioned with the 2 o'clock warrant wake-up call, the Justice of the Peace is mostly a 24-hour job. You have to be available at all times. Are you ready to commit to that?
Yeah, I think a 2 a.m. wake-up call would be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying that with a smile on my
right.
face. But
I don't know.
But it's part of the job that we have to, you know, Roger, I'm a huge proponent of due process, and I absolutely believe in, you know, in in the Fourth Amendment and the Sixth Amendment. And if there isn't somebody who can be objective and say, hey, police don't have enough on this one, right, or they do have enough, it's still, you know, a check and balance on the whole society,
sure,
you know. And I have some very good friends or law enforcement officers, and they agree, you know, we need a check and balance,
sure,
at that level before we go in and survey search warrant or whatever,
sure,
it is, you know. And so, no, absolutely, it's part of the job, and it's going to be a, you know, kind of a fun one in that regard.
I don't know if Devin's going to like that.
Yeah, right. She may not.
So, the Boulder City Justice Database also covers other jurisdictions, right, in this county. Are you familiar with those areas?
Yeah. So there's a interestingly, I had a weird DUI fairly recently that went through justice court, and it was on North Shore Road down by the lake. You know,
okay, mm-hmm,
so you've got Colville, you've,
right,
got North Shore Road. You know, all of the you think in your mind, okay, you're crossing that line into the, mm-hmm, into the park.
Yeah,
everything off of that lake does not go to justice court, but,
right,
everything off of that lake does not go to magistrate court in,
right,
federal court downtown, mm-hmm, either. So there's the North Shore Road, there's Colville, and then south, there's, you know, five or six people who live in Nelson. I'm being,
right,
facetious.
Yep.
I love Nelson. I go,
yeah,
off-roading down,
yeah,
there, and yeah, they're part,
yeah,
of the township.
Okay,
you know, and they did not get annexed by the city of Boulder City.
Right.
They're still part of the unincorporated, mm-hmm, township. But when Boulder City annexed, because it used to be Boulder Township, it was the same geographic,
right,
area it is today. But Boulder City's township was not near as big. And,
right,
then when Boulder City annexed the whole El Dorado Valley to,
right,
frankly, keep Henderson out, I think it was rightfully so.
Yes.
It changed where the fees off the road and the and where the prosecution went,
mm-hmm,
you know. So that crime on that road now will come into Boulder City if it's a misdemeanor.
Sure.
If it's a gross misdemeanor felony, of course, it goes into Boulder Township,
right,
justice.
Okay.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're asked to sit in for a judge in one of the other towns, Laughlin or one of those other towns, right?
Right. So I believe they're on an 8-week rotation now,
mm-hmm,
where, you know, so to talk about the warrant thing at 2,
right,
in the morning, you know, you're not on call 24 hours a day, you know, 365,
right,
days a week for those other areas.
Right.
You will have to, you know,
mm-hmm,
there's a rotation. So I want to say it's, you know, the Jean Court, the Laughlin, the Searchlight Court, Bunkerville, Logandale, Overton, you,
mm-hmm,
know, those,
right,
are on this 8-week rotation.
Right.
And you know, that system has been in place for quite some time and seems to work pretty,
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
I've, you know, read warrants that were Boulder City Justice Court warrants, and I'm,
right,
looking at it, hey, was there really enough, or was the, and then I see, hey, that is signed by Greg,
right,
Mills up in Logandale,
yeah,
you know.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's kind of a neat thing that being in an outlying area, you will see some of the stuff that goes on all over,
sure,
the county.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no question.
Yeah.
Great. Well, just one more question. How do you believe Boulder City would benefit from you becoming the Justice of the Peace?
Roger, I firmly believe that experience matters in this race. I, you know, I'm passionate about the town, as you
sure
know. I'm not going anywhere. I absolutely believe I can do the, you know, the same great job that Vic Miller has done,
right,
without having to learn on the job. I,
right,
mean, it's that's a huge piece of being a judge.
Sure.
You know, the cases we talked about, you know, the warrants and that sort of thing are things that I'm up on. This,
yeah,
is,
mm-hmm,
you know, this is what I do anyway.
Sure. Right.
So I think we need to, you know, look at the experience, you know, the number of appeals I've done. I mean, I've done appeals from magistrate court and federal court up to district court on DUIs and operating under the influence cases and,
mm-hmm,
boats on the lake. I've done, like I said earlier, you know, 20, 25 plus appeals in the child welfare area. I've done numerous appeals in the, you know, to the Court of Appeals in the area of family law, alimony, and that,
mm-hmm,
sort of thing. You know, with having, you know, 1,000 plus criminal trials and preliminary hearings, you know, experience matters. And, and so I just believe I'm the most, and it's not even close, most experienced in the race. It's not even close.
Great. Well, Chris, good luck to you. I think a lot of people know you in town, and you're certainly one of the leading candidates, and we look forward to seeing how you do in the primary and then in the general election.
I appreciate the time. Thank you. And please, everyone, vote in the primary.
Right. Absolutely.
Thanks.
Hope you enjoyed this week's Boulder City podcast, sponsored by the Emerald Island Casino and the Rainbow Club Casino in downtown Henderson, where slot players are treated like royalty. Special thanks to Boulder City Social for partnering with us in helping to disseminate the programs. Check in with us every week leading up to the primary for an interview with one of the candidates for City Council or the Justice of the Peace. So we'll see you next time on the Boulder City podcast.